Ready.
Excellent. I'll let it pass.
Yeah, like, that's part of our aesthetic. That's part of the Philly aesthetic.
Wait, we'll roll through, then it begins.
That lets you know we're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It is Sunday, August 3rd at Boot and Saddle in Philly. I am joined by three of the members of the United Nations. We've got Jeff, we've got Jonah, and we've got Lucas. And left to right, not that it means anything to the listeners, because this is not a visual medium, but whatever. Welcome to Philly, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right, so let's just get into it. At the band's inception, it was always understood to be, Jeff, in a nebulous, mysterious collection of Reagan mask-wearing musicians. Over time, the lineup has seemed to solidify, and a lot of the air of mystery has kind of gone out of it with press and liner notes, all those other things. Obviously, things can change, but do you feel like having a stable, tight, relatively transparent lineup outweighs the benefits of anonymity?
Yep. No, I'm just kidding. I think, it reflects the change in society, you know, towards a more stable, transparent world. Everybody's, like, super honest all the time now with the internet. There's no more corruption anywhere in the world, and there's no conflict. It's very stable. So I think it's indicative of the change in the world. You know, be the change. That's what we're doing. You know, right now everything, if you turn on the news, there's like no stories because nothing bad is happening.
You don't have any material for the next album. Wow.
Oh, well. I know, and that's, it's almost, it would be worth it for Atrocities if we could have another record.
We can always hope. Anyway. The growth in the band musically is obvious with the first album coming out of nowhere and being something very cool. Now, your EP, Nevermind the Bombings, Here's Your Six Figures, it just blew me away and very impressed. So, in your new album, In Stores Now, the next 4 years, continues that momentum. And it's an expansion, it's a lot longer than an EP, obviously, and there's some very strong themes throughout. What was the mindset going in for your second full-length?
Well, I think to start with, we had talked about whether or not we even wanted to do a second full length because the 7-inch seems so much more powerful than the first record that we thought maybe just 7 inches from now on. You know, we thought maybe shorter releases would be more powerful. So that's why we approached this one as like a collection of shorter materials. Like there's like 2 7-inches, a 10-inch, a cassette. That was sort of like the motivation behind packaging it that way, was that like this kind of music, and our band especially, sort of exists best in these like short, powerful bursts. And I think that's why this one's so much further along than the first record.
All right, so whereas many bands are quick and happy to extend a hearty fuck you to subjects like government, authority figures, societal expectations, etc., United Nations is kind of iconoclastic, willing to subvert so-called sacred images from bands like the Beatles, Sex Pistols, and now Black Flag into designs for your own needs. Was this in some way a tribute to these bands, or is that a way to say something along the lines of no one is above criticism, or am I just overthinking it?
All of the above, yeah.
Selection of everything you said, pretty much.
Yeah. Those are all the motivations, and those are all kind of like, well, which is it? It's better not to dive too deep. But also overthink it. Overthink it, but then don't come up with an answer. That's the best
part. I'm good at that,
that's
so
what
cool.
I do with most things. Yeah.
All right, so one thing I haven't heard or read too much about in the press was about the actual recording of the album. Where and with whom did you track it, if you want to reveal that?
Sure. I mean, that's in the liner. I think we did a lot of it with Kevin Bernstein, this guy Kevin Bernstein, at Developing Nations Recording in Baltimore. And then we did some with Mike York, who plays guitar and piano as We Come to Teeth.
Also at
the same same studio. So which, kind of the same group of people.
It was not planned to have Nation in the studio either. That was bizarre thing where we showed up and we were like, oh, Developing Nations. This seems to fit perfectly.
And then also, like, there's a dentist in that building, so it was like the Teeth, and as We Come the Teeth members are joining, and we're at Developing Nation Studios that has the dentist. Like, that's a little weird or whatever. So.
Also, the piano's practice space, which we use, is across the street from a piano liquidation store. So it was the most bizarre thing. Like, oh, you guys practice at a piano liquidation store essentially, and record at a dentist. Did you get your name this way? They're like, we didn't even think of it. We'd never noticed that.
I love that.
I love it so much.
So obviously the end result doesn't sound like something auto-tuned and Pro Tools assembled. It sounds like it was recorded to tape, but it sounds very good, kind of like it was almost done at like God City Studios, which obviously, as you said, it wasn't. Did you guys record it to analog tape? Or, and if so, was that an aesthetic choice to capture a bygone era?
I mean, I think there were elements that were analog, there were elements that were digital. It was a pretty intense process for the couple days that we did it, and Kevin is an incredible guy to work with who is really easy to work with, and he was receptive to any idea, whether or not it was, let's do this on analog, let's do this in digital, let's get a reverb chamber going in a bizarre room to see what we can get going there.
Jump up and down on the floor. Yeah. It was very different from recording at God City.
Yeah, it was certainly like there was just no limit to the experimentation that we wanted to do, which was an incredible thing. And Kevin was such a relaxed guy with it all, and he put up with a lot of changes at the last minute and was totally Gandhi calm about it all. And a lot of producers aren't when like brought into that situation. They're like, "You're not ready? What's up?" And we're like, "No, we just want to try a bunch of stuff."
Was it done relatively quickly, or is it an art?
Yeah, pretty quickly. I mean, in multiple sessions, but all pretty brief, like just a day or two. Like, go in there, bang it out, get three, four songs done.
Starting in, like, 1984, 1981, something like that.
Oh, right, okay. Awesome.
2016, I believe. 2016. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, a couple years, it's going
to
be done.
I look forward to it.
Yes. It's going to be good.
I won't air this until then. All right. So after bouncing around a little bit, of course, intentionally, I'm sure, but it seems like United Nations has settled in a home with temporary residence records. What about them attracted you?
Everything. Yeah, they're a perfect
Their roster, the people there, the packaging they do, their attention to detail.
The fact that they'd have us.
Yeah, the fact that they liked our band, the other bands on the label. Yeah, they're just awesome. Everything.
A great label that is willing to take risks, and talking with them and knowing them and being friends with them, it was incredibly perfect to work with each other. Like, it just seemed very, very natural, like a chemistry you'd find with someone brand new at a bar or something. Like, it just, we met and it was like, okay, this is going to happen someday somehow, and they really came through.
Yeah, I don't think many labels would, like the box set idea, like I mean, like it was so labor intensive and expensive to make and that kind of stuff. So I think they're just in it for the right reasons. So they do stuff like that.
Absolutely. Now, with the tenuous nature of the band and some of the legal gray area that exists, was there any hesitation on their part with any of that? Or
no.
No. I mean, the less rapid cassette in the cease and desist order. So I feel like...
Yeah. They're just like kind of like, well, if you're going to go for it, you might as well go all the way. Because... you're going to get in trouble. If you get in trouble, it won't matter, like, that you took baby steps. So just go for it.
And you mentioned the now sold out limited edition vinyl edition of the album. In a culture of downloading, do you think it's important to offer something really different and outside of the box, so to speak, that can't be replicated digitally, like some limited edition awesome packaging?
You got to think inside the box. To think outside the box set.
I walked into that one, I'm sorry.
No, you gotta think outside the bun, you know? And we did the whole time we were recording this. It was like Taco Bell nonstop. Yeah. A Baja Blast, son!
Baja Blast, son!
Frequent bathroom trips if it's Taco Bell. Yeah. That would explain the urgency, though, too.
Yeah,
it's got a rush.
Yeah, all the songs were doom songs until we went to Taco Bell and came back. And I was like, let's get through these. Let's get through these.
Yeah. Fire sauce.
All right. So I did hear that the vinyl has two different endings depending on which way the needle falls in the grooves. Where does an idea like that come from? Because I've heard of a locked groove, but nothing like that.
That was kind of a collaborative idea between us and Temporary Residents. So we had this... You know, we had a lot of, like... Philip Glass was, like, a major influence on that part of the record, and sort of his work with, like, music for changing parts is, just like, is sort of developing musical ideas in every permutation they could possibly take. And so we had this idea about, like, well, what if they occupied the same space? You know, the two different permutations, what if they were, like, a choice between one and the other? And then so we talked, like, and then, you know, the nature of the two different endings had to be so different so that they would feel different, and then the lyrical content would be totally different, so that the same record can have these two different endings and they say two totally different things. The whole purpose of the record becomes totally different depending on where you land. And then the fact that you're, you know, it's like basically it ends on a thing about choice, whether or not you have a choice in your destiny, and like whether or not like revolutionary thinking has anything to do with politics or personal change. And then so like, you know, depending on which ending you get, there's sort of a different message in it. And the fact that also that that's random. It's a random choice. You don't get to choose which it is. So that's like another level of it.
If you wanted to go with the theme of changing parties, like left to right, it would be the same thing no matter what.
Yeah, right. It says go, you know, one of the endings says go right, go left. You know, it's all the same.
Okay. So now I've got some Jeff-specific questions. So.
All right.
If you guys want to take a nap, I'm kidding. No. Need you here. All right.
The only thing is, in my contract, they answer the Jeff-specific questions.
So have fun with it.
Can't wait.
All right. So you own and operate Collect Records. You started putting out some United Nations, Touche Amore, and Midnight Masses. You've been expanding, and from what I hear, you've got some other releases coming out. Care to talk them up?
Yeah, sure. There's a great doom band from D.C. called Black Clouds, instrumental band that just made this beautiful record called Dreamcation that'll be coming out this fall. We have a 7-inch from a hardcore band called Vanishing Life that's basically Trail of Dead with Walter from Quicksand singing. Sick Feeling is a hardcore band we're doing with Terrible Records, and it's really experimental and fucking cool record. Don from Ink and Dagger's new hardcore band. No Devotions on it, which is my other band. Yeah, we got a whole bunch of stuff planned. Hopefully by spring of next year, we'll have 8 bands. So, yeah.
Did you take what you've learned from other record labels like Eyeball and the other labels that you've been on with your other bands? Are you applying some of those lessons to your own label? Like, what works, what doesn't work? And things are obviously changing, too, so.
You can find out some things that don't work, but what I'm learning is that there's almost endless versions of things not working. Like, you'll fix one problem, but then there's, like, 40 other things that could happen, and another one of the problems happens. And so it's like each project can be screwed up in a different way. Yeah, it's exciting.
All right, so you mentioned it, so let's get into it. No Devotion. The band seems to indicate that neither you nor your bandmates, formerly of the Lost Prophets, have any devotion to your pasts, which is always great. The first single, Stay, features a New Order-esque sound. Well, I mean, if you're escaping a bad past, whatever. But,
I just love the positive spin on it. It's so nice.
Which is great.
Those guys have no devotion to their past, which is great because their past is super scary.
Anyway, did you decide upon the sound to be something drastically different than what you've covered before? And even this band, it's different than United Nations.
Yeah, I wanted to do something completely different. Like, for me, Thursday was like, it had a beginning and it had an end. And I'm not going to try and recreate that because it was perfectly Thursday. That band was exactly what it should have been. And that band is only that band. It's not, you know, I'm not going to recreate it with United Nations. I'm not going to recreate it with No Devotion. So, like, you know, it just had to be its own thing. And when we got together, the thing that seemed to work was sort of like icy, electronic, moody, like, stuff, you know. So all of us were into Jesus and Mary Chain and The Cure and New Order and, Killing Joke is a huge one. And then through, like, more modern bands like Portishead and Chromatics and stuff like that. So, you know, that was kind of, like, the direction we wanted to go. And we wanted to think of each song as, like, a little movie. So it's very, like, about as different as you could be from the United Nations stuff. And I try and just think about them totally differently because, sure, it's still me, but, like, there's no reason that my personality needs to color all the art that I'm involved in, you know? Like, I can take myself out of it and let it just... United Nations is amazing. Like, some of it's very mean-spirited. Some of it's super dark. Like, I'm neither of those things. So, like, when you let yourself go a little and just let the art be it, the art, like, then I think it benefits, you know?
So there was a review. You had a show, what, a week ago? Was that the first No Devotion show?
Yeah, first one was in Cardiff. First one's Cardiff. We did Cardiff, Manchester, London, and Glasgow. Those were the first four shows we did.
Excellent. Of course, you'll be doing a lot of touring. Yeah, thanks. Okay, you'll be doing a lot of touring in America. Do you have any idea on the release date? Or
we'll have another single in the fall and a new record next year.
We'll look forward to that. Now, turning my attention to you, Jonah.
All right.
You did a TED Talk not too long ago where you discussed living without a roadmap. How does one get approached to do something like that, and how do you narrow it down to that?
Well, I'm from Cleveland originally, and TEDx Cleveland hit me up, and they were familiar with what I was doing, so they said, will you do this? And then I said, okay, and they gave me a lot of time in advance. You work with them, you have to come up with an idea, they have to approve it, you have to show them an outline, so you have to work with them a lot. It took a long time, and then you have to memorize it, and sort of, yeah, so they just came to me and were like, would you want to do this thing in 6 months? And I was like, okay, and then I was like, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah, so it's online, you can check it out if you want, you know, it sort of is about sort of my life, but also about how, like, not making decisions can sometimes
be okay.
I mean, look where we are now.
Dude, it's amazing. Don't downplay it.
Yeah, it's like, really good.
I know, I'm really massive. I feel, like, sometimes pretentious talking about it, but yeah.
Allow me to be pretentious about it. I watched it in a bath, and I was like, I had no idea Jonah was this amazingly articulate and deep and when he could speak to an entire room full of people. Like, me and Jonah are very similar in our insecurities, and so to watch someone who was very much like myself do something that I couldn't imagine doing, super proud of my friend, like, butt naked in a bathtub, had to call him, like, dude, so proud of you, this is unbelievable, sorry, I'm naked, but yes, it's rules, I am watching you nude in a bath, but yeah, go see it, like, it's inspirational, and it's exactly how I feel like life should be led if you can do it.
Awesome. Yeah. Especially if you have GPS, you know, then you don't need a roadmap.
That is true.
All right, so it would be difficult to address all of your writing outlets, past and present and future.
That would be really difficult.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Hard for me.
But one of the themes that seemed to emerge from your talk was it's all building towards something. I mean, those are my words, but, you know, your idea. And that's practically a daily mantra of mine. But would you say the journey of finding your way in a creative field is often the most memorable, fulfilling part of it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that I think just working on stuff you're passionate about and maybe not getting bogged down with, like, I mean, I'm lucky because I'm single, you know, I don't have, like, a lot of responsibility outside myself, and that affords me a lot of room to kind of pursue that creative stuff. But yeah, I think it's totally validating. It's awesome. And like I said in my talk, even if it's not your, like, career or whatever, that doesn't mean you sort of have to, like, turn your back on these things that you liked when you were a teenager. So, yeah.
All right, so your time at Alternative Press as a music editor and reviewer is well documented. Do you still have any contact, I mean, any role with Alternative Press? I know you were a script supervisor at the awards.
Yeah, that was, I was writing for them, and I haven't in a little while, but yeah, they hired me to work on the script for the AP Awards, which was really cool. I got to work with Mark Hoppus a lot, and Slash was there, Joan Jett, Joe Perry. Yeah, so it was cool. So I was just still on good terms with all those people. It was fun to be in Cleveland. The awards are awesome, but I don't really write for them so much anymore. But yeah.
Now, people always ask for advice about how to do what you do, and that's normally my cue to not ask. But since, well, that's kind of closely related to a lot of the things I'm interested in, I can't pass up this opportunity. I mean, come on. So aside from internships that seem to be easier to get while one is still in college, and the all-important networking, how else does one set oneself apart and make progress in the glamorous world of freelance reviewing and interviewing?
I think just do it. Like, you don't need to wait for someone else to say it's okay or that you're good enough. I think just do it. Try to get your stuff out there. If you can't get your stuff out there, just do your own thing. People will notice it. I think just, like, it's easy to get bogged down in, like, networking or, like, reading books on how to do stuff, or, like, I think it's just sort of important at one point, if you know how to write, like, just to, like, sit down and just write. That's the most important thing. And I feel the other stuff kind of comes out of that.
And, I think with Jonah, too, like, you know, it's like he's a great writer, but, like, the thing that makes him, like, a very employable writer is that he also knows, like, who he's writing for and what they want. And, like, the more you write for different people, the more you see what they want and, like, how to approach things that way, because it's like if he was, like, always just, like, expressing himself all the time exactly how he wanted on every subject, it's like that's not what his job is, you know what I mean? And, like, I think it's actually more constructive when you, like, consider who's asking for it and what they want and like what the objectives of the piece are. That's one thing that I always like about Jonah's writing. It's like some people try and like, I read a review today on Talkhouse about like a hip hop record that's okay, but it was like talking about like whether or not like sunlight can like defeat a tyrant. And I was just like, man, like this isn't your manifesto, dude. Like I kind of want to know about that record. You know, it's like, so it's like, it's really cool when you can, you know, critically look at something and give people what they want. You know, like give people what they want to know about. You know, you're a journalist.
I read your article about the XX just last night, just to get up to speed. But cool.
And I guess that's sort of what I mean. Is like that's me just like talking about something. But if that was like just a review of a concert, that'd be a pretty poor review. You know what I mean? Like I put myself in it because it is a creative piece. But like, you know, it's like every review Jonah could write something like that for it, but instead. I don't know, it's just something that I think is interesting because I have a hard time just writing, like, you know, it's just a lot of hats to wear all the time.
Your questions are making me feel unprepared for every interview I've ever done.
That's my thing. See, I worry about this stuff ahead of time, then afterwards and during the interview, I know I'm good, you know.
I can attest he spent months on this.
Well, it's very...
very extensive. I'm very impressed.
The bells are making everything that we say really ominous.
Yeah. If I die after this, no, I did my best.
I regret nothing.
Well, yeah, nothing, yeah.
Nothing I can remember.
Yeah. All one of those kids' shirts. Did you see them, Lucas? The band that's on right now, their shirts. Did you see them? You gotta go see them.
Okay.
Amazing.
All right, so I mentioned this earlier, I mean before the interview, but I'm a big fan of Going Off Track. It, along with How Did This Get Made, are my two favorite podcasts. Love them every week.
Awesome.
Yeah. So what interview would you say is your favorite, most memorable, excluding Jeff? I mean, because no pressure.
There's a bunch. I mean, I like the one we did with Lyle Preslar from Minor Threat about him being in Samhain and being in Minor Threat and putting together just like all these Glenn Danzig stories. That one was it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, the one with Lucas is so fun because we're such good friends, and we talked about a lot of stuff we don't talk about like on a day-to-day basis. The ones with Jeff were great. As far as people I'm not sitting next to, the one I did with Chris Conley a few months ago, sort of about like meditation and spirituality, was cool because we have like a lot of similar views on that stuff. All the ones with my sister are so fun to do. It's so cool when she comes by, and then like obviously like people like Fred Armisen or Janine Garofalo. It's just cool to be in a room with them. So yeah, kind of a broad scope. I like them all. Some of the people that I don't think are going to be as interesting turn out to be like the best ones too. So you kind of never know.
I like your one with Def Heaven.
Yeah, the Def Heaven one. We had Brian Cook from Russian Circles guest host that. That one was really fun.
You needed the Urban Dictionary to decipher some of it, but it was awesome.
And even like the one we just did one with Max Bemis. It's like I don't know him personally very well, and we just talked about Judaism and a bunch of topics, and it was cool. It's fun.
Since this won't air for probably a week or two, any spoilers like who we can look forward to?
I believe we have one with Justin Pierre from Motion City Soundtrack. I think that comes out next week. We just did one, put out one with Joyce Manor. And, yeah, we've got a bunch more coming up every Wednesday. So, yeah.
Joyce Manor's, like, killing it right now,
right?
Yeah,
their new record's awesome.
Is it?
Yeah, it's great.
Just, like, I see them everywhere.
Yeah. They were cool. But, yeah, so, yeah, we have a bunch more coming up.
Of course. All right. So, do I recall correctly, you and Steven took a couple classes at the UCB? Or is that just Steven? Okay.
Yeah, we both did. He did many, much more than I did. I did a couple.
Does that inform anything about your writing? Or
yes. Interviewing specifically. I think a lot of the rules, like yes-anding, where it's like you don't negate someone. When someone says these, you go, yes, and this. Like, and just sort of socially, like you have to do all these weird games where you have to like sing a song in the middle of a group of strangers.
Hotspot.
I think all that stuff is good just for interacting with strangers or people or talking to people and making
That's
yourself cool. maybe a little less self-conscious. That's what I took away
That's
from
really
it.
Really cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it wasn't really my thing as far as like improv. It's also like my sister's like a kind of a famous comedian, so it's like that's not really what I want to get into. But I liked it from that aspect. I thought it was really cool exercise to get yourself out of your comfort zone.
I mean, I've been doing that for the last year and a half, and a lot of the people who've been teaching me are UCB disciples, and you know, it's cool. The game thing eventually is like, all right, can we get off game? But
very into the game thing, yeah.
Doesn't Jeff from Orchid do it too?
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah. Jeff Garlock from Orchid is like a teacher at UCB. If you
I
ever get,
saw him, yeah.
He's super funny, and yeah, if you ever get a chance to see him or do a class with him, he's awesome.
The Annoyance Theater is in Brooklyn too, from what I hear. So if you want,
I know it's in Chicago. But I didn't know there
was anywhere about it. Yeah. So if you well, yeah. So if you want to get something that's a little more follow the fun,
yeah.
Look into that maybe.
I like that idea. Follow the fun.
Yeah, I'm doing a show at People's Improv in September that's going to be announced soon, too. So
I think it was just announced now. No, I'm kidding.
Now, although I don't know anything else
specific.
About it. Yeah.
We'll follow your Twitter for that.
Yes, that'd be awesome.
At smashmouth.com.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about our friendship with Smash Mouth?
Please do.
They're awesome.
Yeah, shout out Sean H., their guitar player, and us started tweeting when they were in Disney.
Yeah, they did three sets at Epcot, all bangers.
Yeah, they did three sets at Epcot when we were down there with pianos, and we tried to hang out with them. It didn't work out, but we correspond.
People think that that band's just about all-star, but it's not.
They also walk on the sun, too.
Yeah, and others.
Yep. The deep cuts are super political. People don't ever get to them, yeah. But they're like... Really resonate with our band for sure.
Nothing wrong with taking the back streets.
Mm.
You never know if you don't glow.
Never.
I don't even know the next lyric. Sean H., tweet me about it.
I still have Fush You Mang on tape somewhere, but.
Cool.
On the topic of comedy, that brings me to sound advice. It's a collaboration between you and your sister. Let's see, did you guys collaborate in your younger years on stuff, or was she always just on a strict comedy theater path and you were on a strict music path?
I think we collaborated a lot on comedy unintentionally. Okay. Our dad is really funny, so yeah, he was always joking around, and we just came up around that, and she would always kind of like, she was more into like singing, and she was always into performing, so we put these weird braids in her hair, and yeah.
I think we're blocking people's house, so... Oh, we're good, okay.
But yeah, so we've always kind of just messed around together. This is the first, I guess, like, real official thing we've done.
Very nice.
So yeah, it's been really fun to work with her. We have a very similar sense of humor, and it's cool to do music and comedy in the same package.
Well, it's been fun to watch, too.
Thank you.
Thanks. We have a bunch more coming out as well.
Let's see. Does writing something that's purely comedy, is something sort of new to you, is that satisfy a different part of your brain than more of the editorial stuff?
A little bit, but I would say, I mean, like, if you hang out with me, it's like Lucas or Jeff knows, like, it's a lot of bad puns. It's like, I feel like I'm always...
Great puns. Yeah,
some great puns, some bad, but yeah, it sort of is a...
Babe Ruth is an home run every time, man.
That's true. Yeah, it's a little different, but I feel like it's so much a part of my life that it's not that hard to translate.
Any plans on doing anything on a larger scale? Like, something feature length? Something, I don't know.
No.
Yeah, okay.
That was the best answer.
All right, cool. Okay, so going through my computer to find some covers, obscure material from compilations for someone last week, I came across a Love Kill song, Refrain of the AM, as a part of a compilation called Protect, a benefit for the National Association to Protect Children. How did you get approached to do something like that?
That was Vanessa. That was on Fat Records. Vanessa at Fat Records knew the Love Kill, and she was doing organized this benefit and wanted us to submit a song, and we had that song. I can't remember... was on the record. I think it was on the record, These Moments Are Momentum, that Jeff put out. But yeah, so we released that early, and it was just a benefit, cool thing. There are a lot of awesome bands on that. I think NoFX and a bunch of cool bands. So yeah, that's how it came about. Impressed. Very impressed that you found that.
Alright, so this is for all of you guys. So wake up. What albums came out this year that really impressed you?
Man, I don't think it came out this year. Come to Me Last.
I really like the Hate Rock record, Psychic 9 to 5 Club, that came out this year. I think it's a really beautiful record, and they remind me of like Chris and Cozy and like sort of Throbbing Gristle, like sort of like this era of music that I really, really liked. That one's one of my favorites.
And the record is super sick.
Yeah, I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, the new ETID is amazing. For if you want riff rock, which I love personally, but
yeah, the Against Me record I think is great.
Yeah,
that's really awesome. The La Dispute record I like a lot.
Did the new Touche come out this year? Because I definitely put that on it.
I think that was last year.
End of last year, yeah. Okay.
Like I said, I've listened to Joyce Manor record a lot. I think that's cool. I feel like so many records came out last year that I keep thinking came out this year.
Lower, have you heard the Lower record? It's called Seek Warmer Climes. That's amazing. It's kind of like Ice Age with super nice choruses. I think the White Lung record's really good. God, I buy so much music. The new Fucked Up record's pretty good.
I'm trying to think. I feel like all I do is talk about music I like, and then when someone actually asks me, my mind like just goes totally blank.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's good. No, they're all giving good answers. That's fine.
I think like there are some like records that I've been interested in that are pretty weird. Actually, like I think like that band Jungle. Like I got that record. And there's some like really interesting sounds and textures on it, but I think there's some really really poorly thought through ideas about like racial identity and like how they portray their bands, but I don't know.
I'm not touching that, but yeah.
I like the Connor Robus record a lot. If you just want to chill out, be mellow, it's good.
Which one?
The Connor's new record. Yeah, yeah. It's really good. Upside
That's
Down Mountain.
Some wild stuff too.
Yeah.
Like lawsuit and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff.
Lil Durk mixtape too. So dope.
Oh yeah.
It really That's is. Cool.
Here's how I always end it. One album, Desert Island, rest of your life. What is it?
Slim Spiderland.
Okay. I like your shirt, man.
Thank you.
I'm going to go with...
A Flight into Crash?
No, I'm going to go with Forever and Counting.
Yeah, dog.
It was between Fuel for the Hate Game and Forever and Counting. I think Forever and Counting, though. One of my favorites.
If I was on a desert island and had one record, I guess I'd have to go with something that has like a lot of different vibes to it, so that I could have like my song for like cuddling, you know? Yeah, by myself. Well, are we alone on the desert island? That makes it a totally different world. Shit. Fuck. Yeah. Okay. Well, then my sand family really likes spiritualized ladies and gentlemen while floating through space.
That's a good one.
Eclectic Blur best of that double CD. You could get so many varieties on that. Maybe that. I might change mine to that with a hint of Spiderland.
I might just listen to a Neil Hamburger CD over and over.
Silkworm.
Or Silkworm. Yeah, Silkworm. Maybe Silkworm Libertine or Developer. I don't know. Any Silkworm record.
Integrity would probably be up there on this bands list.
Yeah, Doors of Fear Tomorrow. I'm sorry, I was supposed to name one record, and now it's like seven. But yeah, anything obscure with a lot of screaming from Cleveland sounds good.
Specifically from Cleveland.
Yes.
Talking about straight edge stuff too while you're on a desert island. I mean,
OLC.
Yeah, you're going to be straight edge no matter what, probably.
Yeah, you can.
You can?
Yeah.
Jeff knows firsthand.
Well, thank you guys. That's
you so
that's
much,
the interview.
Man. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Totally.
Amazing.
Thank you.
And like, I really like your style, man.
Yeah. I really appreciate how much work went into
Seriously.
It.
Seriously.
Totally. Sure. I appreciate your music. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been really, really, really cool.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man.
Don't mind if we get a radio spot. Whoever's.